Okay, I'm going to start with chapter 3, and I'm going to start like I did with chapter 2 by reading the short italicized section that's right under where it says chapter 3. That says, Painful Meditations, James H. Birch, Williams's Slave Pen in Washington, The Lackey, Radburn, Assert My Freedom, The Anger of the Trader, The Paddle and Cat o' Nine Tails, The Whipping, New Acquaintances, Ray, Williams, and Randall, Arrival of Little Emily and Her Mother in the Pen, Maternal Sorrows, The Story of Eliza. I'm also going to skip most of the first page. I spoke to Greg about this and it's okay. I'm skipping it because he goes into extreme detail and it's just not that necessary. Let me tell you what happens. You remember at the end of chapter 2, he was, Solomon Northup found himself kidnapped, handcuffed, and with a sort of ankle cuff called fetters, chained to the ground. He wasn't really sure what was going on, but he was obviously very upset. On the top of page 21, it describes the room in which he's held a little bit. I'll read that. The light admitted through the open door enabled me to observe the room in which I was confined. It was about 12 feet square, the walls of solid masonry. The floor was of heavy plank. There was one small window, crossed with great iron bars, with an outside shutter securely fastened. So he's in this room with these really thick concrete walls, a wooden floor, one window that has bars over the window, and it has a shutter so that it's covering, so that he doesn't get any light. Two men come to see him in his cell, if you will. The first one is James Birch, B-U-R-C-H. James Birch is a slave trader, a well-known slave trader in Washington, D.C. And the other guy who comes is Radburn, who is Birch's assistant. He's called a lackey. Basically, it means he doesn't have that much power. He does what the boss tells him to do and, just doesn't really have a mind of his own. I'm actually going to skip ahead and join me, if you will, on page 22 at the top, wherein it says, such is a correct description. That's where I'm going to start from. Such is a correct description as it was in 1841 of Williams's slave pen in Washington, in one of the cellars of which I found myself so unaccountably confined. Okay, now we're going to see the interaction between Solomon Northup and Birch, the slave trader. Well, my boy, how do you feel now? Said Birch as he entered through the open door. I replied that I was sick and inquired the cause of my imprisonment. He answered that I was his slave, that he had bought me, and that he was about to send me to New Orleans. I asserted aloud and boldly that I was a free man, a resident of Saratoga, where I had a wife and children who were also free, and that my name was Northup. I complained bitterly of the strange treatment I had received, and threatened upon my liberation to have satisfaction for the wrong. So he's saying, you can't do this to me, I'm a free man. He denied that I was free, and with an emphatic oath declared that I came from Georgia. Again and again I asserted I was no man's slave, and insisted upon his taking off my chains at once. He endeavored to hush me, as if he feared my voice would be overheard, but I would not be silent, and denounced the authors of my imprisonment, whoever they might be, as unmitigated villains. Finding he could not quiet me, he flew into a towering passion. With blasphemous oaths, he called me a black liar, a runaway from Georgia, and every other profane and vulgar epithet that the most indecent fancy could conceive. So Solomon Northup is telling this man, no, I'm free, I'm a free man. And this guy gets so angry. He just goes into this crazy rage. He says, you're an escaped slave from Georgia, don't lie. And now you'll see what happens. During this time, Radburn was standing silently by. His business was to oversee this human, or rather inhuman, stable, receiving slaves, feeding and whipping them at the rate of 2 shillings a head per day. Turning to him, Birch ordered the paddle and cat-o'-nine-tails to be brought in. Okay, these are two instruments of torture, the paddle and the cat-o'-nine-tails. And if you look on page 24, you'll see a picture, a drawing, of Solomon Northup being whipped with the cat-o'-nine-tails and with the paddle on the floor. The paddle, as it is termed in slave-beating parlance, or at least the one with which I first became acquainted and of which I now speak, was a piece of hard wood board, 18 or 20 inches long, molded to the shape of an old-fashioned pudding stick or ordinary oar. The flattened portion, which was about the size and circumference of 2 open hands, was bored with a small auger in numerous places. The cat was a large rope of many strands, the strands unraveled, and a knot tied at the extremity of each. He just gave some more description of the paddle and the cat-o'-nine-tails, but you can just look at the picture. The picture gives a very good example of what those looked like. As soon as these formidable whips appeared, I was seized by both of them and roughly divested of my clothing. He took his clothes off. My feet, as had been stated, were fastened to the floor. Drawing me over the bench, face downwards, Radburn placed his heavy foot upon the fetters between my wrists, holding them painfully to the floor. So you can see that again in the picture on page 24, that he's bent over the bench and Radburn is stepping on the chains on his wrist to keep him down. With the paddle, Birch commenced beating me. Blow after blow was inflicted upon my naked body. When his unrelenting arm grew tired, he stopped and asked if I still insisted I was a free man. I did insist upon it, and then the blows were renewed, faster and more energetically, if possible, than before. When again tired, he would repeat the same question and receive the same answer, continue his cruel labor. All this time, the incarnate devil was uttering most fiendish oaths. At length, the paddle broke, leaving the useless handle in his hand. Still, I would not yield. All his brutal blows could not force from my lips the foul lie that I was a slave. So he's beating him and beating him. And when Birch gets tired of beating him, he stops and he says, "You still say you're a free man?" And Solomon Northup says, "Yes, I'm a free man." And then he beats him again. He does it over and over and over until the paddle breaks. Casting madly upon the floor the handle of the broken paddle, he seized the rope. This was far more painful than the other. I struggled with all my power, but it was in vain. I prayed for mercy, but my prayer was only answered with imprecations and with stripes. I thought I must die beneath the lashes of the accursed brute. So after the paddle broke, he picked up the whip, the cat-o'-nine-tails, and started beating him with that. And Solomon Northup tells us that there's nothing worse than that. Even now, the flesh crawls upon my bones as I recall the scene. I was all on fire. My sufferings I can compare to nothing else than the burning agonies of hell. So, ladies, I know that you were instructed by Greg, when you're reading, to look for a few key things. You're reading to look for what life was like as a slave and about slave resistance. So we've just read a section that tells us hugely about what life was like as a slave, right? He was incredibly beaten. His entire body was aching. Okay, and we'll read what happens next. At last, I became silent to his repeated questions. I would make no reply. In fact, I was becoming almost unable to speak. Still, he plied the lash without stint upon my poor body until it seemed that the lacerated flesh was stripped from my bones at every stroke. So he said, he's saying here that he even after he stopped talking, stopped saying, "I'm a free man," even after that moment, he was still getting whipped. A man with a particle of mercy in his soul would not have beaten even a dog so cruelly. So he says, if this was a guy, pardon me as I adjust, if this was a guy who had any mercy, he wouldn't even beat a dog the way he beat me. At length, Radburn said that it was useless to whip me anymore, that I would be sore enough. Thereupon, Birch desisted, saying with an admonitory shake of his fist in my face, and hissing the words through his firm-set teeth, that if I ever dared to utter again that I was entitled to my freedom, that I had been kidnapped, or anything whatever of the kind, the castigation I had just received was nothing in comparison with what would follow. He swore that he would either conquer or kill me. With those consolatory words, the fetters were taken from my wrists, my feet still remaining fastened to the ring. The shutter of the little barred window, which had been opened, was again closed, and going out, locking the great door behind them, I was left in darkness as before. So he gives him this incredible beating, this just incredibly brutal beating, and he says, if you ever again say that you are not a slave, this beating will seem like nothing to how badly I'll beat you then. One thing I want you to know, ladies, is that the place where this is happening is like a basement underneath a house in Washington, D.C. This is in our nation's capital, so much so that when the door is open, if he could walk outside, he would be able to look up and see the Capitol building. That's how sort of insane this feels to him, because he knows that's there. I'm at the top of page 25. In an hour, perhaps two, my heart leaped to my throat as the keys rattled in the door again. I, who had been so lonely and who now shuddered and who had longed so ardently to see someone, I cared not who, now shuddered at the thought of a man's approach. A human face was fearful to me. Again, this is the slave experience, the horrors of being a slave, this constant state of fear. A human face was fearful to me, especially a white one. Radburn entered, bringing with him on a tin plate a piece of shriveled fried pork, a slice of bread, and a cup of water. He asked me how I felt and remarked that I had received a pretty severe flogging. He remonstrated with me against the propriety of asserting my freedom. In rather a patronizing and confidential manner, he gave it to me as his advice that the less I said on that subject, the better it would be for me. The man evidently endeavored to appear kind, whether touched at the sight of my sad condition, or with the view of silencing, on my part, any further expression of my rights. It is not necessary now to conjecture. So he said, sure, this guy Radburn comes in, he brings me dinner, and he says, oh, let me give you some advice. You really shouldn't say again that you're a free man, that you're not a slave. You shouldn't do that, okay? Let me be your buddy and tell you. And he says, Solomon Northup says to us, I didn't care. I didn't fall for that. This guy's not my friend. He unlocked the fetters from my ankles, opened the shutters of the little window, and departed, leaving me alone again. So he's unlocked his feet, and now he can, and open the window, so he can move about a bit. But of course, remember, he's just been incredibly beaten. By this time, I had become stiff and sore. My body was covered with blisters, and it was with great pain and difficulty that I could move. From the window, I could observe nothing but the roof resting on the adjacent wall. At night, I laid down upon the damp, hard floor without any pillow or covering whatever. So now he's going to start telling us about his daily life. So one of the things was that he could, when he looked out the window, all he saw was sort of this like low roof of the building next door, and that every night he lay down on the floor without a blanket or pillow. Punctually, twice a day, Radburn came in with his pork and bread and water. I had but little appetite, though I was tormented with continual thirst. My wounds would not permit me to remain but a few moments in any one position, so sitting or standing, or moving slowly round, I passed the days and nights. I was heartsick and discouraged. Thoughts of my family, of my wife and children, continually occupied my mind. When sleep overpowered me, I dreamed of them, dreamed I was again in Saratoga, that I could see their faces and hear their voices calling me. So these are the dreams that he has while he's being held prisoner here, dreams of his family. Awakening from the pleasant phantasms of sleep to the bitter realities around me, I could not but groan and weep. Still, my spirit was not broken. I indulged the anticipation of escape, and that speedily. It was impossible, I reasoned. Pardon me. It was impossible, I reasoned, that men could be so unjust as to detain me as a slave, when the truth of my case was known. Birch, ascertaining I was no runaway from Georgia, would certainly let me go. So this is what he's imagining, like, oh, there's no way he can keep me. I'm obviously a free man. He'll figure it out. Though suspicions of Brown and Hamilton were not unfrequent, I could not reconcile myself to the idea that they were instrumental to my imprisonment. Surely they would seek me out. They would deliver me from thraldom. So he says, oh, come on, those guys I was with, Hamilton, Brown, they'll help me out, right? They'll be looking for me. Alas, I had not then learned the measure of man's inhumanity to man, nor what limitless extent of wickedness he will go for the love of gain. He said, he had all those ideas, but really, he didn't yet know how inhuman men could be to each other. That's the end of part one of chapter 3.